Hey fellas, you're listening to the Fashion Photography Podcast and I'm your host, the fashion advertising photographer Virginia Yancheva. I saw on the social media that you're totally in love with our latest episode with my guest, the young photographer Saskia Lawson. So without further ado, let's go straight to part two, where we talk about contracts, consultants, being tough in this industry, and is this important, and if it is, how to do it. Have you ever had stolen photo from you? Because my guest used to have this problem, and you're just about to hear that story. I'll tell you something that once my father told me, and he was very right back then. He told me, I'm giving to my clients something that most of the people can do. Most of the other companies like mine can provide this service. But he said, you're doing something very different. You're the person who sees something in a very specific way. And you can show it to the world. And there is nobody like you who can show the world exactly the same way. So people are hiring you simply because of your vision. And he was absolutely right, because then he continued with explaining to me, why do I charge so much? Because I'm a pre-pricey photographer and my day is worth my money and my time. So my clients know that they have to pay a lot to shoot with me.
Yeah.
But it happened right after the moment I decided that I deserve those money because of my vision and my projects and my team, because it's not just me in this game. So I think it's the mindset that you have and, of course, very, very strong contract. We cannot lie about it.
Yeah, I just can't wait for the day that someone else can sort that for me. I really dislike that part of the job. I've never been taught how to structure things, so I've kind of had to learn through doing it, and I'm kind of a bit hesitant sometimes that I'm going to do something wrong and seem like unprofessional.
You know, there are so many different people and so many different clients. I even had a fight with a client the other day. Though I'm on the market for so long and I've been shooting for these and these and these brands, I still had a problem with a client. It's like a never-ending process. It's always there having a problem. It's the way you're going to solve it. And if you think this problem deserves your attention, because sometimes people are way too needy and they'll try to squeeze you as much as they can. But it's a thing of whether you are going to let them or not.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think that I'm not as tough as I am. I have done certain things in my job over the past year when I've been like, oh, I've actually scared myself, because I do take it a lot more seriously than I used to. Someone last year, naming no names, took one of my images and had it as their front cover. I kind of emailed them and I said, this is what you owe me for the picture, basically. And it was a really lengthy battle and kind of very confusing on how they actually got that image. But at the end of the day, they had to pay me. And once I'd started with that kind of conversation, I couldn't really stop. And every day I was like, oh, maybe I should just give up. Maybe I should just let them have it and just think of this as like another life lesson. But I was like, no, actually, I deserve to be paid for that. They're making money from my image. And like, this is my job. Yeah, I stuck with it in the end. But yeah.
You're making me really proud right now.
Really?
Yeah, because that's the way we are supposed to react on things like that. Because we have to fight for our rights. I mean, this took your time and your efforts, and you deserve to be paid for this. And it's the most normal thing in the world.
It was more like their reaction to me. They kind of, I mean, I don't know if they searched me. I mean, if you Google me, there's an embarrassing picture of me and my cat on Google. So they probably saw that and thought, she's a kid, like, she doesn't know what she's doing. We're going to take her, like, for she's worth, basically. Mm-hmm. And the way they spoke to me was so rude. I remember being sat in Nando's with my best friend and I looked at her and I said, I'm not going to let them speak to me like this. And it wasn't even about the money in the end. It was more about kind of the principle of, they don't think I'm good enough to pay for this picture. Like, they've got much more money than I have. Mm-hmm. They should pay for it.
They're always acting like this, like they're the boss in this situation.
Yeah.
Of course, there are some cases when we have to step back.
Yeah.
But those are the cases that are not connected to the common sense.
Yeah, this was very much, I knew that they had done the wrong thing and that I needed to be paid for this. So I mean, I got so much advice on it. I spoke to loads of people before I went and, you know,
did
ran
you talk
in there.
To any lawyers?
My godfather works in law, so I had a brief conversation with him, and he said, at the end of the day, if someone takes your image without you saying it's okay, like, it's illegal. So I knew that I had a leg to stand on. It was just how to go about it. Such an awkward thing, and no one ever talks about it. And I mean, I feel bad that I didn't talk about it when it happened. And, you know, this happens to other people that I've known.
Because it's hard to talk about it when it happens.
It's really difficult to talk about it. I mean, because a lot of the people that are involved in that situation, I had a really good connections with. And, you know, I don't want to upset anyone. I'm not a rude person at all. So it was quite a awkward situation, to say the least.
Yeah, it's very hard to talk about things like that because you always have this feeling when a client is acting, even if it's not a client, even if it's just somebody stealing your image, it's always hard because they're reacting so rude, like you said, that you're not sure what's going on. And is this the real world, world that you're living in? So I can totally understand you.
Yeah.
And I'm really proud of your reaction.
Thank you. You
had only the legal advice and there were no processes in the board for this or something like that?
Only because they kind of ignored me. I thought maybe I should do something about this. And my friend said something similar had happened to her years and years ago in a separate industry. And she said, just claim against them in small claims court. So I did that and I still don't think they took it seriously. And then the day before the time limit was up, they kind of just paid me. And I was like, oh, I guess I won then. So nothing really happened like in that sense, but I would have gone ahead with it. I don't really know how I would have handled everything. I would have been terrified, but yeah, that's.
Do you have an advice for the people in your situation?
First of all, find out how they've got that image, because the way in which this magazine had the image made things really confusing for me and kind of got passed along and ended up with them not necessarily knowing they couldn't use it. So you find out how they've got this image, first of all, and then speak to some sort of advice lawyer type person, because it's really tricky. My little sister is studying law. I don't know how she's doing it. It's so confusing. I see her homework and it's ridiculous. But there's so many like loopholes that, you know, you don't want to go in there and be really aggressive and then find out that you're actually in the wrong and they have this image, because that's going to be even worse. So I think definitely do your research before you contact the people.
Did you find out how they got your image?
Yes. It got passed along and people kind of, the emails, like stuff got miscommunicated and yeah. So it's basically just an accident. But at the end of the day, they made money from the front cover. So they had to pay. So
very hot topic.
Yeah.
Let's go back to something easier.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me, what's the last thing you bought that had a positive impact on your life? And this thing has to be under $100.
What, related to my job or personal life or?
Oh, it can be both.
Oh, I'm going to sound really, really nerdy, but the most important thing I bought in the last few months was my rail card, which basically, if I'm traveling up to London, I always try and get the train, because unless I'm lugging all my kit, because I actually really enjoy getting the train and it's easier and quicker to get to London. And I get the train so many times a week that I bought myself a rail card and it saved me so much money. So that is probably actually it.
Where are you based exactly?
So I live in a place called Guildford, which if you drive, it's maybe like an hour and a bit from London. But if you get the train, it takes half an hour. So it's very easy.
Do you see yourself in London at any time, or do you want to move somewhere else, or you're just fine there and you can go every day with your rail card to London to work?
Yeah, with my rail card that saves me so much money. Yeah, at the moment I'm really happy here. I like living here. I live kind of in the countryside, so I love that way of life, but then I also love the fact that I could be in London in half an hour, and it's kind of the best of both worlds. At the moment, I like living here. I mean, I'm not against moving to London in the future, but I don't know.
Tell me about the prices in your city. Can you work in London and go back to your city and feel?
Yeah.
Because we all know that living in London is very, very pricey.
It's actually probably about the same price to live here. I mean, my dad's worked, he lives obviously here, and he's worked in London for like 25 years, and I think it's actually cheaper for him to get a train every day into London than live in London, because obviously it's so expensive. But equally, it's ridiculous prices here. I mean, they're trying to build more houses around here, but it's a bit manic. The house prices are ridiculous, but trains are also ridiculous, so it's very difficult.
Do you have any favorite books connected to photography?
So I wouldn't necessarily read like a photography book, but I read a lot of people's, like, not memoirs, that's not the right word, but their accounts on like the fashion industry. So at the moment I'm reading Alex Shulman's book. So she's the editor of British Vogue. And I love stuff like that. I love hearing about, you know, like behind the scenes on shoots and like stuff like Grace's memoirs. I find that much more interesting, like learning about how they've thought of these shoots rather than this is how you liked the shoot. I'd prefer to learn that whilst doing my shoot, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. That's cool. And I was wondering, have you ever tried with advertising agency outside of UK?
I haven't yet, no. I would say I've only started shooting for kind of bigger names within the last year. I mean, it's something I would definitely look into, but it's still something I'm quite uneducated on. I need to look into that more because I would love to travel. I would love to do stuff somewhere else. Yeah, I would definitely look into that.
And how did you manage to find these advertising agencies that you're working with right now?
For most jobs, actually, they've come from people that have worked within that for that client. That have seen my work on Facebook or on Instagram, or we've had a mutual friend or something. So I've kind of had that way in. And once you've done one big name, they kind of all feed on from each other. So I think that's kind of what's happening at the moment.
Yeah, when your work speaks about itself, that's the best part. Tell me about your daily routine. Is there something you do on a daily basis?
If I'm shooting, I have a studio at my house. So I shoot here if I'm doing a test shoot or like a small editorial. But if I'm going up to London, I have to wake up pretty early. I travel from our tiny village station. So it's like a ghost station. There's like no one there. It's hilarious. So I go from there and then have the shoot. And then my main thing is, like, as soon as I finish shooting, I back up everything onto a hard drive. I had a disaster when I was about 18 and I dropped my only hard drive and lost all my work. So that's like a massive thing for me. I back up everything.
Do you have a specific system for backing up?
I really need to look into getting like online backing up. But I have like a million hard drives. I have a whole desk and I have a drawer just for hard drives.
Oh my God.
So I back up like double. I have, you know, everything on two hard drives. Yeah. If I've got like an admin day, which is like today.
Today is extraordinary day. Come on, we're doing this interview.
I know. I mean, I have nothing else to do. Actually, I have got a lot to do today. I've got to edit. That's one thing I forgot about. Emails, just invoicing, fun stuff like this.
Yeah,
retouching days are my least favorite because I lose interest so quickly. Retouching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I have like the worst attention span. So I have a desk and I basically put like my little iPad next to it and I watch loads of TV series to kind of keep me going.
Why don't you look for a retoucher?
I do use retouchers sometimes, but for smaller stuff, it's cheaper for me to do it myself. So yeah.
Though you can negotiate your prices with the retoucher, even for smaller stuff.
Yeah.
If they're regular, especially.
Yeah, I think for bigger stuff, I use a retoucher now because there's so much I don't know about editing and it's easy to just hand it over to a professional. So, but for my, like my personal stuff, like test shoots and editorials, I like to do it myself because I never know what I want to do with the picture, color wise and stuff. I'd rather just like play around with it myself and try and get that right.
Do you have a specific retoucher that you're working with?
I have a few. I have a girl who, she's so nice. I think she just understands that I'm not a conventional photographer and that I'm a bit crazy. So she kind of understands me. She's really easy to work with. I like her a lot.
Good. It's good that you said it because maybe many retouchers are going to write you down after this interview.
I joke with my friend. I am awful at retouching and I get followers on Instagram every day and I get about 2 retouches a day and I think, oh, they're looking at me and thinking, oh, this is an easy job here.
Maybe if you're up for some new challenges, you can try to work with some new people too.
Yeah, definitely.
And tell me about Facebook. Do you use Facebook?
I mean, obviously I use it personally, but I used to have like a photography page on it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like less and less people look at that page. So, do you know, I only actually update it so I can look back at things, if that makes sense, and know like, oh, I did that on that day. And it's really nice because some like friends of family and stuff like that, they follow that page. They get to see stuff on there. But I don't think these days it has as much of a wide audience as Instagram does. I might be wrong. This is me personally.
Do you have any daily habits that have made your work better? Or at least you believe that they have helped you?
I try and wake up early, but I never ever succeed at that because when I wake up early, I feel like I'm so much more productive. I do watch like behind the scenes of shoots, but mm-hmm. I've kind of exhausted them all, the ones I've watched. I watch loads of Vogue documentaries and stuff like that. I just find them inspiring generally, like watching fashion people work. I don't know why, it's very odd.
And then very interesting.
If I'm doing an editorial and I really need some inspiration, I go on like Fashion Gone Rogue mm-hmm. and Pinterest. I go on Pinterest every day just to try and keep inspired, because when you work alone it can be quite mundane, just sat around retouching. So but there's so much fun stuff that I can look at.
Yeah, like you said, invoicing, emailing, things like that, that's the biggest part of the photography job, though that many people are actually blinding themselves with the idea that you're shooting models every day and it's so much fun.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, people think when I get emails from people at my old college and they're like, oh, can I do work experience with you? And I think like, you could, but you'd see me sat around in my pajamas like most of the week. Like I only shoot probably once a week. It's not how people think it is. A lot of it is literally me just sat around with my cat, like drinking tea, trying to think of a shoot.
But at the same time, it's so gorgeous. I would never say to a person who has any doubt, I don't think I would ever say no to this job. Honestly.
No, never. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would change it. Have you ever thought of changing it?
No, never. Not yet. I've had times where, like, I had a part-time job and I quit it because I got too busy. Mm-hmm. And then I had no work come in. I was like, oh, well, like, what have I done? I'm like relying on this job and now I have like no work. So I got like another part-time job just in a like a pub in the evening. Mm-hmm. But I haven't really thought about giving it up because I don't really have anything else I want to do that badly. Like, I've always wanted to do this. Always. It's weird. If you talk to any of my friends, since I was a kid, I used to go around just with my camera all the time. So I don't really think it's not just a job. It's more like my life. It's more like my way of life. So
it's the best ending of podcast so far.
Oh, really?
I really hope you like part two even more than part one, or at least as much as part one. And in case you've missed part one, don't forget to listen to it on JudeAsherMagazine.com and NeverlandMag.com, where you can hear all of our previous podcasts and also submit your fashion editorial for their magazines. Thank you so much for being with me, and I'll see you on Friday. In case you haven't already, join our Facebook group where you can ask all of your questions even before Friday.